Sean Sherman is one part chef, one part sleuth. He trained extensively in restaurant kitchens, but he was born Oglala Lakota on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. And with all his chef's training, he discovered little about his own culinary heritage, the foods of his people cooked before the Europeans came. Probably because until fairly recently, the cuisines of the original Americans were seen as irrelevant. Pretty startling when you think about it. But Sean became a plains forager, a far-reaching researcher, and a very different sort of cook. Producer Jennifer Russell invited Sean into the studio to get his story.
Thanks for coming in today. It's nice to have you.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So, Sean, how do you define your food?
Well, I am specializing in Native American food, but particularly I'm specializing in the Dakota and the Ojibwe food from this region. Even though I grew up on Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, so I'm Lakota, but I wanted to really focus on the regionality of it. So since my business is here in Minnesota, I wanted to focus on just Dakota and Ojibwe. You know, I started cooking at a really young age. After I moved off the reservation, I moved to the Black Hills, and I started working in tourist restaurants when I had barely just turned 13. So I've been in the restaurants for quite a few years, because I'll be 41 here in a little bit. So it's definitely a lot of time in the kitchen, and it has become a passion, of course, over the past quite a few years.
So can you talk a bit about Native American or indigenous foods, specifically sort of pre-reservation?
Yep. So when I came out, I was kind of focusing on pre-reservation foods, meaning I wanted to know about all the food systems that people were utilizing in this region, because obviously people had survived here for thousands of years and there was lots of great food, and it's obvious with all the food that's in the forest and the lakes and everything. You know, the proteins and the meats were easy because it's just the wild animals were out there. For me, it was a longer study in ethnobotany, basically, what plants were indigenous and growing around here, how Native American people were utilizing things, understanding Native American farming and agriculture, because that was such a huge scene, especially in this region, and understanding how food preservation systems were working for people to maintain and keep a lot of food in their food caches to last them through the long winters. So for me, it was basing my food, my pantry items, based on those pieces, the dried corns, the dried beans, the dried wild rice, of course, and all the varieties of all of that, you know, when they're making things into meal and powder, all the different dried vegetables that were utilized. So those were like the base flavors for me to really think about using in this region. And it really shows how regional and diverse the United States is, because all these micro regions of Native American cultures had different food systems slightly. So it's even different from Dakota down here to Ojibwe in the north, or to the Lakota where I grew up. And it's definitely diverse completely across the board if you start looking at other regions.
So how did you learn about and gather all of this information about these pre-colonization diets and ingredients? It wasn't like there were a lot of written records, I would imagine. How did you go about that?
Yep. When I first started researching, you know, I found there was very little information. I had kind of cross-studied Asian food systems a little bit. And I realized if you're studying like Eastern medicine, just how medicine and food is all combined. And it was really the same way that Native Americans were looking at their food basis too, because all this food was medicine also. It had different properties for different pieces. So I knew there was a large base of what wild plants were used for, wild roots were used for, and I just kind of wanted to search for that. So it just set me on a long path of research, you know, for quite a few years. So reading through lots of ethnobotany books about the plants and indigenous plants of these regions, a lot of history pieces looking for first contact accounts of Europeans of what they're seeing. And unfortunately, a lot of times they would just talk about what men were doing and didn't really break down how the women were, you know, processing everything. And that was the really important part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's luckily a few accounts here and there, some really good volumes and books that really kind of had a big window for me to look at, you know, because as a chef, I was just really looking for food and flavor and technique. So slowly piecing it together. So it's kind of like taking a big broken pot and slowly putting it back together piece by piece until I could see a bigger image of the whole thing. And, you know, I'm still learning a lot as I move forward with it, of course.
So what did you discover about the foods they were growing and gathering on the Great Plains at that time?
So there's many varieties of corn that were being grown. There's many varieties of beans, be it fresh beans to like dried black turtle beans, red beans, yellow beans, white beans. And there's lots of different varieties of squash, you know, things from zucchini to pumpkin, basically. And there's a whole bunch of these old heirloom varieties. And you find farms like around the cities today, like Wojupi or Dream Wild Health, who are slowly growing out some of these heirloom varieties that have been in these regions for a long time. So we can get them back into the food systems and especially back onto hopefully some more traditional Native American tables. There was, you know, of course, like I said, the meats were easy because, you know, there's the venison, there's duck, there's bison, there's rabbit. You know, there was also squirrel and muskrat and things like that. All the river fish, you know, the walleye, the trout, whitefish, northerns. So there was quite a few options out there and tons of flavors and so much fruit and berries that grow, so many roots. You know, there's the wild potatoes, there's wild ginger. There's so much food around us, and I use a lot of tree food too. So I use a lot of cedar and fir tree and pine and spruce and things like that, not only for teas but for also just seasoning. And you know, so I modernize the food some, but I try to keep it really minimalist style in cooking. So I'm only using a few ingredients, so not using any of the processed sugar, no flour, no beef, pork, or chicken, and really trying to really stay true to a lot of the indigenous ingredients as much as possible. So I might add a few organic vegetable pieces here and there, but for the most part, you know, I'm probably hitting 95% indigenous options on the menus that I build.
That's really cool. You touched on it a little bit, but can you talk about the role of preservation in this Native American cuisine? It was huge.
Mm-hmm. And like during harvest season, especially around the farms, it would be a huge deal because they would just build these mass scaffolding just so they could, you know, sun dry all the corn and squash and things like that quite a ways above ground and have small fires set below. So you have heat coming from below and a little bit of smoke also. But, you know, sun drying and smoking was the best way to preserve. And it was such an important way because I was able to, you know, keep foods for quite a long time throughout the winter season, definitely. So if you read books like Buffalo Bird Woman's Garden, where she plots out how they built these old food caches and how they laid everything out, and that they would make quite a few of them, you know, to almost like one per month throughout the winter season to break into. So food preservation was extremely important.
Mm-hmm. So all of this has led to more than just cooking for you. What's next?
You know, I think my ultimate goal would be to help set up some kind of Native American training center. I can envision having a center almost like a cooking school that would teach people an education on Native American farming, foraging, preservation techniques, salt making processes, the different styles of cooking with fire and the different styles that people were traditionally cooking, you know, clay cooking, earth and oven cooking, styles and techniques like that. Of course, an education of just processing all the different kinds of foods that were being harvested, whether through agriculture or through foraging. And, you know, be able to give basically like a Native American cooking degree to students or do adult outreach education so people can come in and learn, and just helping bring a Native American food culture into the modern world.
Sean, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sean Sherman is the sous chef. Jennifer Russell is our producer. For more information on Sean and to get his recipe for wasapi, a traditional Native American berry dish, go to splendidtable.org.